waking up in the middle of my life. Nothing's what it seems. I feel the fire come alive. I feel the fire come alive.
If you've been listening to this program, you know it's about the ongoing evolution of consciousness and who we are, the evolving civilization of people waking up to our greater divinity. That's what the show is about. So, Melinda's specialty is tuning into ancient civilizations, particularly the past. I mean, besides that, she's also a healer, a psychotherapist, a
doctor of divinity, filmmaker.
Change agent. But the work that we really should talk about tonight is your work about Egypt, around Egypt, about the ancient civilization that really probably was the most established. I mean, ancient Egypt probably lasted unofficially for 20,000 years. I mean, from the fall of Atlantis, if we want to go there. And if we don't want to go there, at least 5,000 years from the oldest pyramid text to like the invasion of Alexander the Great or something, or after that, the Roman conquest. I mean, so that's a good 5,000 years of solid history. And it is the root of Western civilization. I mean, the Greeks got this stuff from the Egyptians and the Romans and the rest of Europe. But, why is it so important that we know about ancient Egypt now? Why do you feel it's so important? What secrets do they have for us?
Well, I feel, like you said, that it is the birthplace of civilization in the sense that it goes way, way back. It goes, I mean, what we're finding in the Western Desert, for instance, is aqueducts and villages and cities that go back to about 20,000 BC. And I feel it's important for Egypt, important why these discoveries are coming out now.
These are new discoveries. Brand new discoveries. And I think you are in on that process. And why it's coming out now is
because it's time for us to remember who we are. It's time to break the amnesia of our past, not really knowing who we really are, not knowing how long we've been on the planet, not knowing our capabilities, not knowing our capabilities and our length of time that we've been on this planet and the things that we've done.
And our divinity, I think it's really the amnesia that you're talking about, the fact that we've been kind of brainwashed by a Western materialistic paradigm that says that we are just limited in this time and space, that we are not a part of a great consciousness. And that's the amnesia that we are suffering. That's the amnesia that I think connecting to a place like ancient Egypt, where they didn't forget, there wasn't that kind of forgetting, because their civilization was sort of built, I mean the ancient civilization, were built on that knowing.
I believe that it was. I mean, the manuscripts that I, and diaries I ended up having from Amseti, the man who hired her, who was an archaeologist.
Let's talk about these. Melinda has these special manuscripts that go back to a woman named Amseti, and that's really what her work about Egypt is sort of focused on, the work of Amseti. Tell people who Amseti was and how you got the manuscripts, and then we can talk about what were in the manuscripts.
Okay. Well, Amseti was an English woman who, I forget exactly the date that she was born, but she was born in London.
I think it's the 1890s.
Was it? Yeah. died in 1981.
Oh, and she was 80, and she died at 80, so she probably
81.
Born, yeah, so she probably born around then,
right.
Early 90s.
So she was, she had a near-death experience around the age of 5, and after that, she started having a mummy come visit her. And
she called it a mummy, but it was really a pharaoh, right?
It was, but he was dressed in the beginning as a mummy.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And he would visit her every night in her dream from the age of 5 onward.
Basically, yes. And it got to the point where when she was, her parents took her to the British Museum.
Uh-huh.
And when they were in Egypt part of the British Museum, she saw a picture of Seti I's temple. And she went, that's my home. That's where I'm from. And so she, even as a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, started working with the renowned Wallace Budge, who was in charge of the Egypt department at the British Museum, and helped him with, because she remembered being a priestess in the temple of Isis when Seti I was buried.
So Om Seti was working, I mean, even aware as a child that Egypt was her home, that she always wanted to live in Egypt, and she did. She actually moved to Egypt and spent the rest of her life there. So she was working with Wallace Budge at the British Museum, and what was the thing that got her to Egypt? Do you know? I mean, how she actually...
Well, how she got to Egypt was she married an Egyptian.
Oh.
And so she got to Egypt that way,
mm-hmm.
and their marriage lasted just a couple of years. She had a And, of course, that's hence her name, because she named her son Seti.
Okay.
And in Egyptian, ancient Egyptian, means mother.
So she was Om Seti. But since 5 years old, it's in the book, A Search for Om Seti. It's a great book, and Merlinda has the diaries of Om Seti. But every night, she would dream of Seti the First. From 5 years old onward, but I guess as she grew up, she started to record those dreams, right?
And not just even dreams. She would have, he would come in her waking consciousness.
He would.
Too. Yes. Oh. She makes comments that sometimes she felt like her parents thought that she was completely off the wall, because she would be in her room talking, to Seti,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, there would be no one there. They couldn't see him.
But she would see him.
Yes.
And, you know, the thing about Seti the First, I mean, he was the father of Ramses II, and the Egyptian empire expanded, but he was a mystic, right? There's something in the book Om Seti where he took a course. It was probably wasn't a course then, but he took some type of initiation where he was then able to, travel out of body, right? Where he mm-hmm. had that training, where he had a facility to, what do they call it? That's the Ka?
The Ka body.
The
is,
Ka.
Right.
He developed that, so when he passed on, he still had that Ka body intact that made his consciousness a vehicle to move between dimensions.
Right. And not only the consciousness, but the outline of his physical form.
You have to be an advanced kind of adept to have that.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Right, so that's all part of the ancient Egyptian mysteries. I feel that the Merkaba came from these very early Egyptian, or we could even say Syrian, ancient teachings.
So the Egyptian lineage of mysteries goes back to the Syrian kind of initiation, the Syrian beings that would come.
I feel that it did, and that the Syrians were not just unique to Egypt, but they were also unique to Samaria and other places in the Fertile Crescent.
But you, what I'm interested in your work are the mysteries. It's the mystery school, it's the ancient mystery school, and I And it seems like Om Seti is a link to the ancient mystery school. Yes, she found these archaeological sites, and when Seti told her, okay, tell the archaeologists to dig here, she told them to dig there, they found these old temples, and,
and
she lived in Abydos, which was a center of ritual and celebration for thousands of years in the ancient Egyptian times. But the mystery school, what was the purpose of the mystery? What, and I think that's what we need to remember.
Well, again, I don't know if this is the total purpose, but getting back to the myrrh in the Merkaba, myrrh is an ancient Egyptian, means heart's desire.
That's your name, myrrh, right. Myrrh Linda. Myrrh, heart's desire.
Right, heart's desire.
And Linda is beautiful.
Right.
Beautiful heart's desire.
Beautiful heart's
okay.
desire.
Okay, Merkaba, okay.
Right, and then the ka that the Egyptians believe, or the Karina, if you want to feminize it, is our other body spirit. The Ka is our body spirit. It's why are we in this body, and why do we have this spirit that we have now? They believe that there was another Ka, and sometimes they call it the shadow, or the double,
right?
It was part of us. It was a spirit, our spirit. And this is my interpretation, that spirit is on the Milky Way, that spirit is basically transversing the different celestial bodies, that Earth isn't just one, and that through having the heart's desire, those two kas come together. And so that, the next step is the Ba, which is your soul, the soul of the Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best translation. And the soul is the solidifier of the heart desire and bringing our body spirits together. It's almost like the higher self of the Ka that we are now hopefully tapping into.
Mm-hmm.
Gets integrated with this body spirit.
Wait, the Ka is not the soul. The Ka is the essence of a kind of light body or,
The spirit. So
the spirit is
not the
soul.
No.
There are two, I mean, I know lots of people say there are two different things.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So the
spirit is really almost like your character. You know,
okay.
What is your spirit? What's
okay.
your, you know?
And the soul is that universal essence.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And the soul is depicted in Egyptian as always a bird, so that it can fly between the worlds.
It flies away. Ah.
Fly between the worlds, too.
Mm.
And so we become that. We become this Merkaba. And that's exactly what Seti the First did. Even though he was in Amenti, which is what we call our heaven, for let's say it was around 1300 BC, so it was 3300 years, he still was able to, when he had the heart's desire, to find Om Seti and reconnect with her. And so his body spirit, his Ka, there was no time, there's no time, there's no space between them. You know, he could come to her in this body. And she talks about having to use her spirit, her Ka, to energize the connection between.
How did she activate her Ka to energize her connection to? I mean, how do we do that? How do we energize?
Well, again, I feel it has a lot to do with the heart's desire.
You keep talking.
Okay, so I think it has a lot to do with the heart's desire, and so the heart's desire can really pull everything together, can make things happen if we have that will and focus coming from our heart, the love, the glue, we can basically create a situation where, you know, it's not a ghost anymore. It's, you know, Brother John, you know, mm-hmm. coming back to visit us in this dimension.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, it kind of gets into the whole idea that there are so many multiple realities available to us that we've been so conditioned to be unaware of.
Mm-hmm.
And so now is the time, and I think it is the time in our evolution. I mean, that's why I call this program New Realities, and that's why I focus on these issues, is because they haven't been acknowledged for a long, long time. And civilizations like Egypt, ancient Egypt, were aware that there are these levels of reality that exist. And I think that's also another reason to study these ancient times, because that awareness is coming into our time, and we need to have a model of what those realities are about, and there are these.
Well, and it, and it's in our psyches. It's already in our soul. If we're all one,
mm-hmm.
And these things took place and these studies happened, you know, 20,000 years ago, mm-hmm. in, you know, the Western Desert of Egypt. Then we know that.
Right.
And so it's a re-remembering, just like going and finding, right, the pieces of Osiris.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we remembered him. We put his members back together, you know.
Right. So we are doing that on a big global planetary level. We are remembering our own divinity, our own connection to source, whatever you want to say that is, but we are remembering who we are.
We are remembering who we are, and what I mean, the perfect example of that and teaching of that is at Delphi,
mm-hmm.
where it's over the gateway. When you first start out walking, it says, "Know thyself."
Mm-hmm.
That is the key here. How can we be grounded? How can we be rooted? How can we really be mm-hmm. in all parts of ourselves if we're still under amnesia?
Mm-hmm. You know, I was in Cyprus, actually, and I met these scholars who translated the emblem of Delphi further, and they say, know thyself, and you will know the universe and the gods. That's the rest of that Delphonic saying,
right.
that the mystery schools, we go back to the mystery schools, right. which we're all about. I mean, so here we are, and you have these diaries of Omsteady.
Some diaries.
Oh, you don't have all the diaries?
No, I don't have all the diaries.
How many diaries? I mean, of course, from when she was. What diaries do you have? And tell people how you actually got those diaries. Because
diaries, and really it was the bulk of what I have is unpublished manuscripts that she wrote
mm-hmm.
to for Walter Fair Service and for the Chicago House, basically. Walter had a dig in...
Who was Walter?
Walter Fair Service was a very renowned archaeologist and Egyptologist. He taught at Vassar, and he worked for National Geographic. He was sort of the original Indiana Jones, and he had a dig in Egypt called Hierakonpolis. And it was a pre-dynastic dig.
Where was that? Which part?
It's
of it?
Outside of Edfu.
Okay. I've been to Edfu.
Right.
The beautiful Temple of Horus at Edfu.
Right. And this was, and what he found at Hierakonpolis is that he was finding votives where the old Nile.
What's a votive?
A votive. He was finding just figurines, basically.
Oh, okay.
A lot of figurines.
Where the old Nile
used to.
Yeah, the Nile changed its course by 20 degrees. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not since, even before the damming of the Nile, it was already changing its course slowly.
Yes.
According to the Ramses at that. And they said that flooded some of the old monuments that were there, and as it changes again, those old monuments, is what I say, may be revealed. And maybe that is what's really happening now, is some of these new spines come on. So anyway, this guy, this archaeologist, was there. He was digging up these little figurines, and
he was digging up things that are dating back to 7,000, 10,000
years old.
How did
he know how much they dated back?
I don't know.
But he's the archaeologist. He figured it out.
I don't know.
So it was 7,000, 10,000 years, this pottery, these pyramids. And then what?
So he also knew of Om Seti, because everyone in Egypt, knew of Om Seti.
This crazy English woman who was living there among. So he looked her up, being an American, and she being English. He looked her up.
He really respected Om Seti, and he respected the fact that she not only was 100% correct every time she said she told the archaeologist where to dig, but she also had this incredible knowledge of the spells and the healing technologies, especially for women.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for women. And so she was respected. And so him finding these votives and finding all these things, he realized that that he needed someone who could remember the folklore,
what that was about.
Right. So through that, so these manuscripts, it took her, I think, 20 years to compile. But I think I have 582 pages.
You do?
Yes. Of the manuscript. And then interspersed in there were some of her own writings.
What's in the main bulk of the manuscript, though? What?
Well, the main bulk has to do with folklore. It has to do with customs
that she got from Seti the First. That she
not necessarily just from living in Egypt and knowing the people and knowing and yes, some of her own.
Intuitive.
Exactly.
But just also say how you, person living in Santa Fe, New Mexico, ended up with these manuscripts of this woman living in Egypt.
Oh my gosh. Unbelievable serendipity. Time after time. I was going to massage, I was living in Connecticut at the time, and I was going to massage school, and this woman was working on me. All of a sudden, she said, "Oh my God, I'm feeling like Egypt. I'm feeling Egypt with you." And she pulls out a book and she goes, "I want you to here, take the book. Please read the book." And so I take the book and it's In Search of Om Seti. Mm-hmm. I take it home
by Jonathan Ott.
Right. And that night we had my older son and I had moved to a new community in Connecticut. And so anyway, I went down to a video store with my son at the time, and I walk in, very little, tiny little town in Connecticut, and the guy in back of the counter goes, "You're into Egypt, aren't you?"
Really?
Out of nowhere.
Wow.
And he goes, I'm a painter. I'm an artist, and I just do this on the side, and I just did a portrait of this incredible archaeologist daughter, and you have to go meet this. I'm like, really?
This was the same day you got the book.
The same day.
Wow.
The same day.
Okay.
So he writes down this man's name. And
what day was it? Was that? Do you remember the date?
No, I don't. It was 1987.
Okay. Just curious.
Or 8.
Whatever. Okay, but later. Okay.
Right.
So, okay. He writes down this name of this archaeologist.
Right.
Because he thinks you should meet this guy.
So I go home, and my son is watching a video, and I start reading this book, In Search of Om Seti. And I think it's page 52. There is a footnote. And so I look at the footnote, and he goes, "These unpublished manuscripts are still in the hands of Dr. Walter Fairservice." And I go, I think that's the name. I pull it out of my raincoat pocket and I look, and it's the same name.
It's the name the guy gave you in the video store, Dr. William Fairservice.
Walter Fair Surgeons.
And so, what did you think then?
Well, I thought that something was really happening.
The universe was conspiring to, like, tell
right,
you something.
Exactly.
And what did you do?
Well, I ended up home, and they lived only a town over.
Mm-hmm.
And went and met them and hit it off. He and his wife, they're really a team. She was a graphic artist, and so she went on a lot of digs with Walter. And so really hit it off. And at that, a little later, like a week or 2 weeks later, I had a past life regression done.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past life regression, what came up was the Book of Gates that I had helped to create this Book of Gates.
From ancient Egypt.
Well, I'm assuming, yeah. In the
what is the Book of Gates?
Well, see, I didn't know any of this. So I called Walter up and I said, do you know about the Book of Gates? And he goes, yes, I even have the original copies of the Book of Gates. And I'm, really? Okay. Can I come and look at the books? Yeah, you can come. Well, the Book of Gates is part of the Book of the Dead. So it's a later
which they call the pyramid text. Is that what they call it?
Yes, the pyramid.
Which is one of the oldest texts from ancient Egypt.
Right, right.
Okay, so you helped in that past life, right? The Book of
in this past life regression, that's what came.
So you go to Walter, and he says, yeah, and then what happened?
Well, then I start, you know, the Book of Gates is about your soul's journey through the Dwat. It's about the
Dwat is...
The Dwat is the journey. The Dwat is
of the underworld, or what?
Yes, of the underworld, of the unconscious, of the netherworld.
Uh-huh.
They call it the netherworld.
That the dead goes through.
Right, right.
Which was very important for the Egyptian religion. I mean, that's a big part of their.
It's a huge part of their pageantry and the different initiations that they go through. The beginning of that journey is Mot, the goddess Mot, and the weighing of the heart. So what starts off this, I mean, I knew nothing at that point about ancient Egypt. And religion-wise, I had grown up a congregationalist with a minister looking at the window. I mean, you know.
But you did study some spirituality before.
Oh, yes.
But Egypt was all...
Wasn't necessarily...
Yeah, okay. So then you start to... Okay, so they measure the heart. When someone dies, like, take us through that journey.
Right. So it's called the judgment. And when you die, your heart is put on a scale. And Mot, who's the goddess Mot, she is depicted as a feather. And if your heart is as light as the feather, then that is your first step in being able to go to a mentee.
But if your heart is heavier,
then you get eaten by Sobek, which is the crocodile, you know, in some cases, different ones, and that you reincarnate again, that you're not ready.
To go to a mentee.
A mentee is equated with our heaven. It doesn't have animosity. There's no anger. It's very idyllic. It's written. It's actually drawn in Saqqara, in the Step Pyramids,
mm-hmm.
as a beautiful place like Earth. Only it doesn't have all the angst.
So you go. Your heart's way. Then you go on the journey to Amenta. But
right.
But there's all these processes on the way to that journey. Right.
Right. So the first and most important is the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And even the Egyptians, when they were embalming, you know, later down the pharaohs, you know, embalmed, the different organs were taken out of the body, but the heart wasn't taken out.
Uh-huh.
In fact, the heart was sealed with the eye. The Uja, the eye of Horus, that the all-seeing eye protected the heart on its journey through the dwada.
So it's the heart that goes on the journey.
That's right. Wow. Because the heart, to the Egyptians and to myself, is the seat of your memory.
That of the ka?
Of your whole being. Uh-huh. It is the seat of memory. It is the brain that directs you, not your brain, not mm-hmm. your head brain, but your heart.
Your feelings and your heart directs you.
Everything. Okay. It is, it's like the record keeper. It's okay. And so if your heart is stolen, and they literally believe this, they believe that it was very tenuous when you were on the journey, that if your heart wasn't protected, a black magician, dark forces could take your heart, and then when you reincarnated, you wouldn't remember.
Or if you went to the halls of the men, you wouldn't be able to get to the halls of the
men. That's right, you wouldn't be able to get there. Why would someone do that to somebody else? Well, because of control. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, but anyway, you getting back to your situation, you went to Walter, this archaeologist, and why did he give you the manuscripts?
Well, it was a process. He, in the beginning, and Jano, his wife, said, "I would like you to read the manuscript."
Because you were friendly, and he had the manuscripts because Holmes said he couldn't publish them. She gave the manuscripts to this archaeologist. Why did she end up giving me manuscripts to work?
Well, no, he hired her to give me.
Oh, so he
paid her.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So she wrote these manuscripts, and he had them, and they were never published.
Right, and they couldn't. He tried to get them published, but it never fell under any category. It was always a dead end street. Mm-hmm.
So he just had them. He said, "Here, have them." But I mean,
no, he wanted me to read them.
He must have thought they were pretty amazing, though.
Yes, he did, and I have a lot of her artwork too that goes along with that.
So you just read them, and then eventually,
yeah, it's another whole story. How I think it was three years later, I'm doing a PhD in mythology, and I had just gotten a master's in counseling, and so you have to see counselors when you're getting this. And so I was seeing a Jungian therapist, and the Jungian therapist said, "You have so many synchronicities, you've got to go see this palmist." And so I went to see this palmist. I know this is...
No, it's okay. I'm seeing some
amazing. Yeah, I know. The whole thing's
amazing. No, and then what did the palmist say?
The palmist looked at my hand, and at one point she said, "Oh my God, you've got to go back to your home, or you've got to go back. Where are you from?" And I said, "I'm from Connecticut." And she said, "Oh, there's some unfinished business in Connecticut, and you've got to go back. In fact, it has to do with these mysteries, these ancient mysteries. You see this line here? It has to do with the ancient mysteries." I'm like, really? And then I remembered I hadn't said goodbye to them. Jano. So I called them up right after the palm reading, and they were like, "Well, where have you been for the last, 3 years?" And I said, "Well, I moved, blah, blah, blah." And they said, "Well, what about the manuscripts? And, don't you want to read them? And, maybe you could publish them or, what?" So anyway, I got on a plane and I flew to Connecticut, and
you got these manuscripts?
I got the manuscripts, and it was my intention at the time to see if I could get them published. Could understand.
I remember, I think, is that when I mentioned you were around Mexico? Yeah. Because you just told me that you had these manuscripts.
Right.
And you were living back in New Mexico. I was living in New Mexico as well.
Right.
And you didn't get them published, but you started to read them. And what did find in the manuscripts?
Right. Well, I truly believe in the manuscripts that Om Seti coded. She had an incredible desire, and she talked about it openly, that the pyramid texts that she had an interpretation around what the pyramid texts really meant. Now, the pyramid texts, again, go back to Zeptepi. They go
Zeptepi
back
is
the first time.
Oh.
And so, see, I believe that the Egyptians, too, had amnesia after that cataclysmic event. Certain things that they remembered, certain things that were, you know.
Well, at least when the pharaohs came in from the first dynasty, they were already this inequality between men and women. And what you're talking about is the time where there was the not just the worship of the divine, feminine, but the masculine feminine were in balance.
Right.
And then in dynastic Egypt, there was this need of the pharaohs and the decline of the women's equality.
It was the decline of the feminine. In general,
right.
The priestesses were, later, a lot of the priestesses of the Ka were mutilated, actually, were and their graves found in Abydos, in northern Abydos, where the priest caste system came into play.
So that was already in amnesia, but if you go back to that time before that, then you see the equality and the understanding of the divine feminine,
right.
And the, and Isis was the major
right.
figure throughout all of ancient Egypt,
right.
up until, you know, up until that point. And it probably, that time of Isis and the feminine lasted thousands of years before it was that fall in that amnesic period, right?
Yes, I really believe it lasted a long time.
So we are now returning to the time of that equality, the divine masculine, divine feminine. Which is probably why Om Seti focused so much on the folk tales of women
yes.
in that manuscript. So we go back and read the text that way in her text. What is she saying about that? What is she saying about this lineage of Isis, as you call it?
Well, her thrust
mm-hmm.
really was, like I said, in healing and bringing back these ancient rituals. Especially for women. It's not solely just for women,
right.
but especially. And so one of the things that I have too is that she wrote a big paper on women that were noted, like the first medical doctor
in Egypt.
Egypt was a woman, and mm-hmm. one of the first women pharaohs, I mean, pharaohs was a woman, and
mm-hmm.
one of the first. The head of the growing things were women, agriculture were women, and anyway, she had all this wisdom around bringing, rising again the memory of the divine feminine
mm-hmm.
because she really knew that it was within
mm-hmm.
the women and the men because it was in their psyches, and so. She was trying to raise up in Abydos in the 50s and 60s.
Right. The idea of this divine
right.
feminine presence.
That's right.
Which probably they weren't ready for in the 50s and 60s. But, I mean,
I don't know.
I mean, maybe it was the beginning of that.
Right.
But, you know, she was this great mystic. I mean, actually, in the search for Om Seti, you don't really get that she was this great mystic. It's sort of a matter of fact telling. And talking to you and discovering what she really knew, you see she was a great sage, seer.
Oh, yes, very much so.
Wise woman. And
so getting back to the unpublished
yes,
manuscripts,
yes.
I focused on what she was interpreting in the pyramid texts. And in that, there are spells that she picked out. She translated
spells like, you know, you'd say some words and for things to happen. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, and declarations
uh-huh.
really.
That go back to ancient.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you picked that out.
Right.
Uh-huh.
I picked that out, and again, you know, we're talking about the soul's journey.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And so it they were. Fixated and fascinated on when a person died, the different gates and initiations one would go through, very similar to the bardos, where the Tibetans would go through these different bardos, and each one was as important as the next to get to where you were going.
So the Egyptian stuff and the Tibetan stuff are very much in alignment.
Yeah.
Makes you think maybe it's true, right?
Right.
Maybe they really are onto something, that
right.
these two totally different civilizations from opposite sides of the world have a similar understanding of the underworld, of the other world. So, okay, getting back to this, so what else did you discover in this? I think, you know, the healing work that you're doing now. Well, talk about then what else you found.
Well, it was, you know, it's been a process. And recently I've been able to channel. I mean, Aum Seti is with me quite a bit.
Well, that's the thing you didn't say here, that Walter said to you, the archaeologist said that
yes.
you reminded him of Aum Seti.
Yes, that's right.
He said that to you.
Yes,
directly.
He did.
He felt this kindred spirit. And you never met Aum Seti. But you started to get a sense of her being.
Yeah, her tricks.
But when did you start to get this sense of her essence?
Oh, I feel I got a sense of her essence when I actually had a yurt put up on the property in New Mexico, and it was basically dedicated to going through the manuscript. So at that point in time, I studied her drawings, her artwork, her, you know, her handwriting, and I got a sense of her, but I didn't really take that into myself, like her ka possibly intermingling with my ka.
Do you sense her ka?
Yes.
It's intermingled with, and so what does that mean?
It means that I am more understanding and directed by what I'm doing right now. I feel that her body, spirit, her memory has somehow infused with mine.
And she's guiding you to do what?
Well, I'm just putting one foot in front of the other, but I feel that these mysteries, these techniques, these initiations, and this re-remembrance and the opening of the heart is what is very, very important. There's two things that I do, and one is called, well, there's more than two things. But the things that I'm doing right now are called, one I call the Sa-Ra technique. And the Sa-Ra technique has to do with the releasing and healing the trauma that traps the heart. Sa means universal energy that glues things together and protects them. And Ra is the universal energy, the solar force energy. So Sa is the universal energy of protection around this, our solar.
So by reading the manuscript, you start to access this healing technique of freeing the seals over the heart.
Right.
And you now work with people to do this. And the other thing that you also got is to do this journey to the Western Desert.
Right. Well, not just to the Western Desert, but to do a replica or somewhat replica journey of what Aum Seti did each year.
Each year she would
the
take
way
a journey.
I understand it. Yes, she would dress in white. She would bathe in the Asylum, which is, you know, a very, very ancient temple that goes back to about that we know at least goes back 10,000 BC, probably. Older than that, and she would bathe, and she really believed and actually had success with the healing waters of the Osirian.
Oh, and it's still there.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Osirian and the waters are still there.
Well, the waters are still there, but the energy of other water coming in, the ground waters, so it's not... It, the Osirian is over a spring, and so that spring water is the healing one of the healings.
So she'd bathe in the water, she'd dress in white, and then what would she do?
She would get on a camel and she would go...
Not by herself.
I don't know.
She probably had some company,
sure,
right?
Sure, probably.
She'd
yeah.
get on a camel and go from where she was living in Abydos, which is sort of the central part of Egypt, on the Nile, west to into the desert.
Actually, the Nile doesn't go. It used to.
It used to. Went before they dammed up the...
Well, it just, the Nile has changed.
Okay, so anyway, but she'd go, but it's not far from there.
No, it's about 3 miles.
So, but she'd head west to the Sahara, or the whatever desert.
Well, actually, no, she would, okay, yeah. She would go north.
Yeah.
And northern Abydos is the oldest part of Abydos. It's mm-hmm. where pre-dynastic burials are. It's where when the pageantry was done for thousands of years, the Isis Osirian pageantry, people were buried there. It's actually called the City of Pots because so many red pots were broken there, because that is where people would come and they would want to die. They would want to leave their spirit souls. They would want to...
Like that place in India, Benares, where the same thing, where people go there to die and leave their ashes. So anyway, so she would go from Abydos. Tell us about that journey and why it was so important for her.
Well, I just wanted to explain that. Going north from the Osirian goes into what is known as Northern Abydos. And this is an ancient route that was done for the pilgrimages. Mm-hmm. And then people would, you know, just like in Mexico, certain Native Americans or Pueblo Indians would make their own pots, their death pots, and they would, their loved one would go and they would smash the pot. So that the spirit could be free. Very, very similar ritual, I believe, that was done by the Egyptians.
Okay.
And so she would take this walk through the early part of Abydos, the ancient part of Abydos, and then to the east, there's a gap between these mesas and. Mm-hmm. It's called the El Gape. And it is, I believe, in the pyramid text. It's a, you know, there's a special, it's like walking through a portal.
An entryway.
Yeah.
And it's actually physically there. There's these mounds. And have you been there yet?
Yeah.
Well, you have. Mm-hmm. How far from Abydos is the gap?
It's really all part of Abydos, but let's see, from Seti, the first temple, and the village, it is maybe a mile.
Okay, so you go through the gap, and then what happens? I mean, where is she going on this journey?
Well,
the
reason why I've always wanted to do this is because she said that going through the El Gape, there were ancient cities on the other side. She called them cities of light. She called them, like sometimes she could see them and sometimes she couldn't. She was incredibly clairvoyant and right on. I mean, when you're standing before you go through the El Gape, you're standing right before you go through this gap, and you look out west, she told the archaeologists that there were thousands and thousands and thousands of tombs.
Really? That's still uncovered.
Right. And they dug, this German team, Klaus Baer, who they dug and they found thousands and thousands and thousands of tombs.
Maybe,
in the 90s. I mean,
because maybe, well, that area, what before it was desert, was part of the greater Egyptian civilization, extended out that way, and then as the desert came east, people moved closer to the Nile. But anyway, where would she go on this journey?
Well, that wasn't really defined.
Well, who knows, right? We don't know. But it was definitely wetter. I mean, John West and the Mystery of the Sphinx proved habitat, it was a much wetter climate at least 10,000 years ago.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you
the
can...
water markings on the Sphinx.
Right.
But
So, I don't know where she went, but how this came to light recently, in I think it's August, is that I kept thinking about how, really wanting to do this journey and getting it together, and I you know had a guidance to stop at a restaurant, and I did, and the guidance said start talking about you know your heart's desire here. And I did, and just one afternoon.
Just a little cafe in a little town in New Mexico. You walked in.
And there was an interest. And people came over to the table, and
it was like a community room.
Yeah. And so you know, I'm just describing my own say. I have these papers. I really want to go through the El Cafe,
right.
And you know, and it just so happened that the people that I was talking to had an expedition team, they found ancient artifacts and things like that, which I had no idea. So the next day I get a telephone call saying, well, we really are interested in this and we're now looking at Google Earth and actually finding some amazing things, but you need to give us a trajectory from the ramp of the Assyrian so that we have more particulars to look at that go through the El Gape. So where...
Which direction?
Yeah.
And so what did you do?
So he said, well, we need some numbers. And I said, okay.
So you asked Onseti because she's around you. And you got an answer from Onseti.
Right, 3 of 5.
Did you know what that meant?
No, I had no... So he took the 305.
305 degrees from that point.
Yeah, he took the 305, and so we have it all mapped out now.
And what did he find?
We found a lot of things. Of course, it wasn't just one day, but he started finding, we found ancient aqueducts that
were buried or still...
You could see them from the air. See, you know, this man who was looking at them is very trained
saw ancient aqueducts that led into the Assyrian aqueducts.
Well, no, I can't say that led into the Assyrian. We believe some of the spurs of the aqueducts could possibly lead into. But there is a big, because there's a gap, we're not sure, but there are aqueducts that go north, south for hundreds and hundreds of miles. And then they're...
Are these known by archaeologists, or they're not even...
I think they have to.
But they haven't
they're not.
Figured it out.
Well, they're not.
Well, how...
They're not talking.
How far would Onseti travel on her road?
I don't know.
I don't know how long she'd be gone.
I don't know.
Maybe what her destination was. Does anyone know that? Did she ever write about?
I think Horus, who is there
in Egypt,
in Abydos, he was the one that she saved his life when he was 2 years old. He is now taking people to
Onseti tour. So
yeah.
He has the rest of the.
I don't think he ever wrote anything. I think it's all more oral.
We'll have to check.
Yes.
But you're going to take people. Yeah.
Yes, I want to take people a number of places, but yes, taking people on Jeep. I mean, we're talking some of the geoglyphs that we found out there are absolutely amazing. Some of the, you know, the aqueducts, there's one structure that has been excavated, and it's a huge area. It looks like a parallelogram. It's not, but it's that kind. Huge, and in the middle is a circle, and in the circle is a white glowing pyramid.
Really?
And then around it, the aqueducts go to it, and then around it are these geoglyphs of like incredibly modern aircraft that are in these circular hangars, and there are 8 of them around this. They're not new.
And archaeologists know about this, but they haven't.
We don't know what archaeologists. No one's talking in Egypt about this.
So you're saying
there's something going on.
But you're saying there's so much history that we have yet to integrate into our modern understanding of what Egypt's all about.
That's because,
and it seems like they've always done this in the last 20 years, because it's so incompatible with what they know about Egypt, that the mainstream just ignores it. And what you want to do is start to create a story about what this is really about.
Right, right. And so we haven't been on the ground there. We've only seen these things for a year. So, but what we've seen is quite amazing, and it would fill in a lot. But even regardless of that,
yes,
there's other things that are still in the Temple of Seti I in a new way of looking at the story of the Duat and the story of
the Temple of Seti I in Abydos. There's
the 7 chapters.
But what are you hoping to find? I mean, Marlinda's going to go on this journey probably in November. You're invited if you want to come. If you're listening, you're welcome. You can email me. I'll pass it on to you. Marlinda, newrealities@earthlink.net. And what are you expecting to find?
Well, one thing is that Abydos has been the center of this spiritual. It's been a spiritual center. For your soul, for the soul of Egypt for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And I just want to bring in that the early Gnostics in northern Abydos, it's called Nag Hammadi, which is about 6 miles away, but where the monasteries were for the scrolls that were found at Nag Hammadi. And the monasteries are right there.
And the Nag Hammadi became the foundation of the Gnostic wisdom that we know about today. The Gnostic scrolls are there.
Well, yes. And the Gnostic scrolls really deal with the feminine. That is where the Gospel of Mary Magdalene.
Oh, so it's always been a site of goddess worship going back to Isis as well.
It's been a site of the feminine.
Abydos in particular.
Yeah, and being adjacent to Nag Hammadi. It's not what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
It's been a melting pot of spirituality for a long time. Not one particular sect, but
going on this journey, which you will go, is a part of the remembering. It's a part of, I mean, it's quite a huge undertaking to turn around world history like this.
Yeah, well.
I mean, it's exciting.
Yeah.
I want to go.
Right.
No, I think it's amazing.
I want you to go.
Okay, let's go, and everybody's invited. But if you can then prove that ancient Egypt goes back to these goddess worship times that is thousands and thousands of years older than we suspect, that they had this ancient spiritual wisdom that connects us to these other planes of who we are as human beings, this could change our modern history, our modern understanding of who we are.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's a real paradigm shift.
It is a real paradigm shift. And so the pilgrimage is, you know, the different initiations that are really templated in the Temple of Seti, with the raising of the Jigged, which is the raising of the Murray and the light column of the masculine, and it is being done by the feminine. The feminine is the one that is really assisting because of her wisdom and her strength and her intuition. Masculine, so that the coming together of the male and female, the alchemy through the heart, is, you know, what I mean, that's it.
It is the mystery. It is the spiritual journey.
It is the mystery.
It's like if we can take the journey of the joie now, we complete that, so perhaps we can arrive at the halls of Amante without having to go to die and do that. We achieve a kind of enlightenment or awakening that puts us on those planes of perception.
That's right. Now.
Right. This life. Awakening.
Right.
Yes.
And so I believe that there is portal of light between the Milky Way or the center of Ursa Major and the terrestrial. I believe that these wormholes or pathways or whatever are there. They've just been dormant because it hasn't been dormant.
Or to Sirius, that's what the chambers in the Great Pyramid pointed right, the air shafts pointed right to Sirius at certain times of the year that connected to the sarcophagus in the middle of the king's chamber.
Right.
Which wasn't to bury the dead, it was actually a communication device to those distant stars. I mean, at least that's what I believe.
And where your ka spirit could actually go.
Or you actually, when I lay down in the sarcophagus in the king's chamber,
right.
I felt this incredible awakening, union. I felt this, perhaps as you're saying it, that my ka, my
right.
doubles joined together into a kind of wholeness.
Yes.
Have you been in the
kitchen? Yes, I have a number of times, and I felt, I just felt like this infusion of energy.
That's why, and it's also because of the piezoelectric effect in the environment under the,
right.
you know, the quartz
right.
silicon, quartz crystals under that heavy pressure,
right.
kind of like intensifying everything in the chamber.
Yes.
But I think that creates a portal.
Oh yeah.
And I think you're right. There are portals, and I think we're going to find some portals as we go out the El Gafé into the desert. That those sacred sites out there were built on portals that probably this time are waiting to be reactivated.
Right.
That's mine.
Right. And I believe that the journey, you know, in Abydos in 1991, they dug up in northern Abydos 13 huge ships.
I was in Abydos in 91. Yeah. And they dug up what? Ship
12. Huge seafaring ships.
In Abydos.
Yeah. Still, yeah.
Okay. We're going to have to wrap it up as a stage. But no, so just finish that thought.
Well, sure. that the ships going on these waterways.
Oh, the aqueducts.
The aqueducts is also part of the journey of the Duat. So actually, you know, recreating that on, you know, however we want to do it, you know.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
So we got, but tell people how to get in touch with you.
Okay. My website is www.sarateknique.com.
Sarateknique.com.
Great.
Thank you. And I've been talking to Merlinda Arnold, who is the keeper of the sacred manuscripts of Avon Seti. And I hope you heard. Let me know. You can email me at newreality@earthbeing.net. Check my website. Let me know if you want to go on a journey.
Thank you.
Waking up in the middle of the day feels like a dream. Walking halls in the middle of the night, not my favorite time. Waking up in the middle of my life, nothing's what it seems. I feel the fire, come alive. Feel the fire.